Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. I'm Melissa Lee. Tonight's trader lineup, Karen Feinerman, Steve Grasso, Tim Seymour, and James McDonald. Tonight on Fast, one of our traders says the market is confused. What they saw in today's sell-off that was a real head-scratcher. We'll break it down for you straight ahead. Plus, the chart master says look out below. Why Carter Worth says there could be more selling ahead. We'll tell you what he is seeing in the charts. And later, we're going bargain hunting as the Dow wraps up its worst week of the year. Find out if any of the beaten down Dow stocks are worth a second look. But we start off with a Friday fumble, stocks selling off to close out the week with all three major averages finishing near session lows. And the selling was widespread. Every single S&P sector lower today, with energy, utilities, financials posting the biggest losses. And the stocks fell. Yields also fell, the 10-year tumbling back to 1.44%. And today's action has one of our traders scratching his head. Tim, you're calling this market confused. Why is that?
Well, if you think about the reaction this week, first of all, I think that the market has gone from focused on the long end of the curve to the short end of the curve. That may be accurate. But if you think about what really has outperformed in the last couple of days since that Fed meeting, triple Qs, so NASDAQ 100 or mega cap tech stocks and even higher multiple stocks have outperformed. But triple Qs outperformed the S&P by about 2.7%. You know, the sense was as we were going into a period of higher inflation and concern around the Fed and higher rates overall, what were most under pressure? What stocks, what subsectors were really going to take the brunt of this? It was high multiple stocks. It was tech stocks, because the sense was we were in a higher growth economic environment. We were in an inflationary environment. And what was going to outperform? In fact, the market's done the exact opposite. And I'm not saying that the market isn't onto something here. And it may be partly what I said a couple weeks ago when I said I thought that the bond market on the long end of the curve might be going two steps out from the Fed, which is to actually lean on growth. But look, this week, I think the Fed got back some credibility in terms of their focus on inflation and addressing it. But I think ultimately the fact that you saw the parts of the market that shouldn't do well in a higher rate environment do poorly. And yes, I know the yield curve flattened, but the impact on the banks was disproportionate to what this news meant. So a little bit of a head scratcher. I get how markets work, but I think this is not going to be the way they trade next week.
Have you seen the blood? I mean, we're showing the XLF right now, but the blood in the KRE, the regional bank index, down 7%. For the week, Karen, I mean, that is where you're seeing it the hardest in terms of the flattening of the yield curve and the perceived impact on these stocks.
Right. Well, they also don't have some of the benefits of what the big money center banks have. Even though their trading income may be lower, it's still big. Investment banking income is still big. Asset management is still very big. So I agree with Tim's confusion in general, I guess. I think that his characterization of, the Fed gain some credibility, there is someone watching inflation, is why there's less of a fear of inflation. If you look at the break evens on inflation, it sort of peaked right at this sort of probably the highest use of the word transitory, probably right at that day. So that's come in a lot. I think, though, there are some bargains out there. I mean, I always say buy when there's blood on the streets, even if it's your own. It is my own. I can guarantee you plenty of my own blood out there. And I got a buy list, ready to go. As painful as it is, I think Monday we could see another sell-off, and I'll start buying.
Give me one name. Give me one name.
FedEx, Citibank. That's two.
Sounds like a final trade.
Two for one. Could be.
I think, Tim's right. You have the short end of the curve. You have the long end of the curve. You have the 210 spread. That's what hits the banks the most, and that rolled over. I'm not really sure what
finish.
I'm not really sure what the market is overly concerned with, because I do see it as transitory regarding inflation. Mm-hmm. Lumber came in 50% from its high, or 45% from its high recently in a handful of days. We're worried about a handful of things that probably will never happen. So go ahead, Karen, finish your.
So I believe banks do trade with this idea of the 210 spread.
Yeah.
However, that's not the way their big books are. Like, if you look at J.P. Morgan, they brought their duration in. They didn't want to be, you know, taking big interest rate bets. And so I agree with what you're saying. I think the expectation of how badly this will hit NIM is probably overdone.
Right. And I think people, sorry, but I think people normally trade banks off of that, whether it's changed
yes.
or not changed.
Right.
And that's where perception is reality right,
right
now. People are selling value. So to Tim's point where he left it, I'll leave it. I think value is going to do a heck of a lot better next week.
Yeah. And of course, we can't forget the Bullard comments made on CNBC earlier today, introducing the idea that he would be looking for the first hike in 2022, which is not really what people are expecting, James. So how do you sort of factor that into all of this?
Well, we've had a revision by an increase of 50% for core inflation by the Fed in just the last 90 days. Data is moving quickly, and the reaction to that data has to be as responsive. And, you know, to the comments about the regional bank index, understand regional bank index doubled in value from October and post vaccine announcements, and the rally following the election was unprecedented in that space as well as in small caps. And I think that in the unwinding of a bullish tone, there's going to be some aggressive moves, whether they're related to rates or more precisely related to sentiment shifts. And the sentiment of the Fed is going to quickly adapt to employment numbers that may come in under 5% by year end, inflation numbers that are spiraling, and then the overall positive outlook for our physical health with regard to reopenings. And I think all of the things that caused the Fed to take action have been waning. And as a result, you know, we're going to see some of these markets behave more normally relative to long term trends.
More normally, and also having to respond to a Fed that may not be operating sort of on a autopilot sort of mode or in a very predictable mode, Tim. I mean, what Bullard also introduced was the idea that the Fed would be more responsive to each and every data point. And we know that the Fed is data dependent, all of that.
Yeah.
But he said it's not going to be on autopilot like we were on the last taper. And things have been so volatile and we've seen such outsized numbers that the Fed will be much more reactive to that point in time, which is uncertainty in the markets.
Right. So you use the volatility. So you referenced at least the market will be more volatile. We went into that Fed meeting at really for this cycle, peak Fed dovishness or Fed put or complacency or, you know, at 15 handle. And I think it's going to be very difficult for the Fed to have any dovish tone in the third quarter. I think what's going to happen is you're going to continue to see some hot numbers. You have to see actually the labor market engage even that much more, puts a little more pressure on. And I think you're going to get to a period where that ultimately some of this will prove transitory and we will get to a place as I think the Fed's going to get a lot more dovish as we get into next year. But it does mean that I think it could be a little challenging and it sets up for a really potentially difficult September. Look, the market had a major, major reaction this week. It was quiet on some level on the surface. Today, the S&P gave up a lot of ground. Really, until today, it wasn't that painful on the headline, but it was very painful below the surface. I think you have a case where you know, you've put the Fed in a position where that Fed put for markets for now is I don't see where that can come back anytime soon. And I think for the Fed's sake, they'd be wise not to let us think it can come back anytime soon. And I don't think there's anything wrong with this. And I think what we're saying, and I think Karen's saying this about banks, hey, you know, I welcome this on some level. I think it's a case where fundamentals for money center banks, which are going to have enormous leverage to this part of the economy. And yeah, twos, tens, maybe flatter. And by the way, the short end of the curve is going to continue to that's where the flattening is going to come from, if you ask me. But the bank's businesses are in such great position and everything that the Fed is doing is a function of what will be good for banks. And valuations are interesting.
So, James, back to you. In this environment, where are you finding value? How are you positioning?
It's a great question. I think if we go back to the comments of understanding what sectors have the greatest sensitivity to the sentiment shifts and then look within those sectors, I like the personal care industry. I think that there's a lot of names around consumer product focused companies that are seeing a big recovery based on the reopenings. And, you know, those names are going to always be attributed to consumer demand spikes, and the consumer demand spikes that we're going to see in the stock market are going to be based on the, you know, the climate change of going back to work, going back to school, going back to life, going back to travel. And I think that those consumer goods products in individual names are looking hot.
Yeah, you got to start bathing and shaving and smelling decent if you're going to see people in person.
I thought you were talking about that to James specifically.
Yeah. Well, he's remote.
As a whole.
Somebody else is here on set with me. No, but also within Bullard's comments, something that was very interesting, he called it a threatening housing bubble that could be brewing, talking in the context of the Fed pulling back on purchases of MBS. What do you think of that? I mean, things are very different in terms of, you know, how the income requirements, like all sorts of things versus the last housing bubble. But for him to even use those terms is sort of jarring.
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising. I do think this time is different. That time was the most different ever.
Right.
This isn't like that. Right. I think, as you're, I mean, credit scores are very different. And I don't know. I'm still relatively bullish on the home builder trade. We've been in a supply demand dynamic that favors them for a while. It really favored them a lot, but I still think that dynamic is good. So I have exposure there.
Yeah. You still in builders?
I am not, but I agree with that. And I'm looking at another builder to buy right now because the dynamics have changed. People moving out of the cities up to the country. They rented in the cities. They're buying out in the country. So they're doubling up. So the demand issue is real and it's ongoing.
Yeah. Tim, what's on your sort of buy list, if there is a buy list for you?
Yeah, there is. And first of all, so they're talking home builders. Home Depot, Lowe's, Home Improvement, and they've been trading down with this, too. Some sense, first of all, it was some fear of higher interest rates. Like, the comps are mostly what killed Home Depot. Home Depot's down 15% from the highs. Their comps actually have stabilized. They get a lot better. If you look at their professional businesses, it's 45% of their mix. I have to say, this is an environment that's very bullish for them. Everything about it, everything about the pent-up demand, everything about the consumer savings, so all that is good. And look, Amazon. So this is a time where I think not Prime Day in a couple of days, which may be part of the 10% move in the last 10 days. I think the market's flagged some of this. But after consolidating for, you know, all the way back to last summer, I think this is actually a defensive stock that's actually grown into, it's not value territory, but I like the call. And look, that's more of a hedge to what I was saying was going on earlier when I said that you're seeing mega cap tech outperform. I don't think that it will. And I think the market, after it burns through this reaction to the Fed, will start to get back to some cyclical and some value. But I like Amazon and I like it standing out from the other mega cap tech names.
All right, let's bring in the chart master, Carter Worth, to break down some key levels to watch following this week's sell-off. Carter, over to you. What are you watching?
You bet. Right before we get to some of the charts, I mean, I think it's a pretty good example of how the market is ahead of the facts. What we see is weakness the last 2 days. But really, I mean, the KRE peaked on March 18th. This is June 18th. Right? The industrial sector peaked 3 weeks ago. The BKX almost 4 weeks ago. The weakness of the last 2 days, news related or not, Fed related or not, has been underway for sessions and sessions and sessions. It's not out of nowhere. And what's been happening, of course, for 4, 5, 8 sessions? Things like Adobe and Amazon coming to life, meaning the market was ahead of the Fed, if you will, or figured out maybe what was coming. How that is, that's the genius of collective wisdom. In any event, let's look at a few things. The first is a table. And so what we know is that if you were to look at the pandemic low, we dropped 35%, and in the 15 months since, we've gone up 95%. There have been 5+% sell-offs, meaning instances where we've dropped more than 5%, 6 of them, in fact. And the important thing is, what is the average decline of those 6 instances? And it's 7.8%. So as we look at the charts, just remember that number, down 7.8, and here we go. First chart, this is the chart that shows those 6 drawdowns, sell-offs, dips, corrections, whatever you want to call them, since the pandemic low. Next chart, this is the same chart again, but it's showing you the trend line that's been in effect since the pandemic low. And this week, we breached that trend line for the first time. The next chart, the last two combined. So here's our trend line. Here are 6 drawdowns. And so we are now below the trend line. What reference point can we use from here? The next chart, it puts together the trend line and the 150 moving average. Next chart is just the 150 moving average. And so were we simply to go down and touch the smoothing mechanism, guess what percent decline that is? Last and final chart, It is down 7.8% peak to trough. And again, of the six 5% plus sell-offs, we've had tenors, we've had nines, we've had five. 7.8 is the exact average. That's exactly where the 150 moving average comes into play. I think that's garden variety and to be expected.
Wow. All right, Carter, thank you. We'll see you a little bit later on. Carter Braxton, Worth of Cornerstone. Steve, what do you make of Carter's levels?
Yeah, I like it. He goes with the smoothing mechanism, which is the 150. A lot of people look at the 200-day. If we sell down, if the drawdown hits the 200-day, we're down a little over 10%. That's probably what people are looking for as far as trying to get back into value. So six, half dozen of the other, either down 8 or down 10.
James, how about you?
The S&P's performance since last year, this time, and the recovery and follow-through post-vaccine announcement, post-election, has just been historic. And I think, you know, what Carter points out, you know, Carter has to adjust his metrics to 5% moves. I mean, normally you could kind of look at 10% moves after coming off of a big market crash like that. We've seen an enormous amount of buying for the last 5 months, and obviously the indication that that could stop is somewhat of a surprise to people. I think that S&P support has come in again and again and again, and you can count on one hand how many times it hasn't in an entire year. So I think that, you know, there's still something to see what happens. This is not your father's S&P 500. The NASDAQ 100 hit an all-time high just yesterday, and the preponderance of the names in the NASDAQ 100 dominate the S&P. And so if we look at weakness in the S&P, we're really looking at non-tech names. We're really looking at a broader scope of firms that, you know, may not participate in the recovery as strongly. And so I think it's difficult to look at the S&P 500 in the context of, you know, long-term historical trends. And what we look at and focusing on this is looking at what all the indices are doing. And again, you know, we're literally one day off of an all-time high on the NASDAQ 100. So I wouldn't take too much into account what's happened in the other indexes until we see follow through on tech.
All right, coming up, we're going bargain hunting. The Dow wrapping up its worst week of the year. So is this an opportunity to buy into some beaten down names? Find out in our favorite Friday night game. And later, stick around for options action. We're laying out a winning trade on Nike ahead of earnings. We're live from the Nasdaq market site in New York's Times Square. Fast Money's back right after this.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. The Dow just handed in its worst week since October, so that got us thinking, is it time to go bargain hunting? What better way than
trade
the good old game?
Trade it or fade it!
I was going to say trade it or fade it, but the animation did it for me. That's right, trade it or fade it. Yes. The beaten down Dow edition. Let's start appropriately with Dow, the worst hit name in the index this week, down nearly 9%. Steve Grasso, trade it or fade it?
I'm going to say trade it. And the last couple of, to keep in the same theme as Carter Worth, a couple of drawdowns that we've seen recently has resulted in the stock rebounding up over 30%. I'm looking for it to rebound maybe 20% or so. Trade it.
Tim, where do you stand on Dow?
Yeah, I'm going to fade it. And I don't like fading it because if I'm going to stay consistent with some of the statements I made earlier, yeah, that's a big boom. I think you've got a case where, ultimately some of these cyclical and value-oriented companies, and I don't think Dow's expensive here, but I think the strength in the dollar, the overall concern around some of the industrial names is something that at least I have not been in the chemicals trade and some of that industrial trade like Steve. I just ultimately, you know, I think there are better places to be. And this weakness on the charts doesn't look great.
All right, let's move on to Walgreens, down more than 8% since Monday. So Karen, trade it or fade it?
Trade it. I'm actually long, so that would be my book talking. I mean, you know, it's... We've talked about things that are low multiples that were out of favor this week. This is certainly one of them. I do think at this level, 10 and 10, 11 PE with a yield north of 3, closer to 4, actually. I understand the macro winds that are, you know, we've talked about Amazon for a long, long time, but I do think people will be out. I think it's a reopened trade, and I think this valuation's too low. So all that having been said, trade it.
James, trade it or fade it?
Want to fade it. I think the Uber Eats partnership is good, but we're off almost 10% in a single week, and I think that spells trouble. This move is too much for a stock with a low beta of 0.56, and looking at its technical levels, it's had a tough time breaking above $56 on 7 occasions in 5 of the 6 months in 2021. And so having a difficulty breaking out above that all-time high, but then on the flip side, the breakdown below $52 today, where it's seen resistance in each of the first 3 months of the first quarter, I think that spells trouble. I'd be a buyer, though, in the low 40s.
Okay. Next up, Triple M down 5.5% this week. Tim?
Yeah, it's probably the same refrain here. I'm going to fade this one. I just think there are better places to be in the industrial space. And I know, like, 3M's business has gotten interesting. I mean, they've refocused a lot of the business. They're a lot more into data and data analytics around their core customers. But it's just not the place to be picking up a beaten down chart here, where I don't think the chart looks good either.
Steve?
So I'm going to say trade this one. The last time it breached the 100-day moving average, which it just did today, was back in January, and it rallied about 13, 14% off of that. But let's think about this. The 10-year can't get out of its own way on a yield, and this has a dividend yield of over 3%. I'm going to say there's a couple of reasons to be a buyer of this. I would buy it. Trade it.
Excuse me. Caterpillar down almost 5.4% this week. James McDonald, trade it or fade it?
This was a tough one for me because I love old, good, solid names, and Caterpillar is definitely that. It can benefit from the improving industrial activity. It's achieved some savings from its restructuring. It's increased its profitability. But this is a seller's market, and despite a low beta of 9.2, I think there's more pressure coming ahead than there is support.
Karen, trade it or fade it, Cat?
Okay, trade it. Partially because just dead cat bounce is just too right. You gotta kind of think that works there for a little bit. But just looking at Caterpillar versus copper, which obviously they're very correlated. They are in fact highly, highly correlated to the dollar over the last 6 months. So I just think we've had a big sell-off in commodities. We all know that. I think it's time for a little bounce. And of course, if that bounces, cat will trade that dead cat bounce as well.
All right. Coming up next, we got the final trade. Stay tuned. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Tim Seymour.
Yeah, I think fifth time will be the charm in Amazon's attempt to break their 3,500. Prime Day, I think, will just underscore where they have a juggernaut in terms of their ability to keep folks engaged and the e-commerce growth in their business. So, Amazon.
James McDonald.
PSQ, if this is the end of the bull market, at least in the short term, this is where you want to put your money. Short the NASDAQ 100.
Steve Grasso.
Lennar, two headwinds have been the 10-year and lumber prices. Both of them have come in. Bye, Lennar.
Chairwoman.
Yes, on the heels of that Lennar trade, I like Whirlpool, adding that to my buy list.
All right, that does it for us here on Fast Money.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.